Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Seth Payne.
And I'm Sean Pendergast.
Did you know that Payne and Pendergast is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
That's awesome. Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or if you're a jump straight to the highlight person, we got you covered as well.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for our names, my name first, obviously.
Hey!
And hit the follow button to get every minute of the show, your way and on your time.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Podcast. New episodes drop daily.
The drive is live.
Well, it is, and I said it from the top. This is easily the most beautiful, perfect weather day of this month, of the season. And we're here, outside, enjoying it. Come see us and enjoy it with us. Sean Bajani, that is me. Brandon Scott, a.k.a. B. Scott, a.k.a. Badass B. Scott.
Appreciate that.
Is here. And we're just out here talking about the most important things in Houston sports life, enjoying the best weather you could possibly enjoy at Popstroke. I don't know how many holes this is. I forgot to ask, but
yeah,
it has to be like 27 to 36 holes. It's a Tiger Woods designed mini golf course, and it is about the best thing going this side of Katy. The beer is flowing. The food is absolutely amazing. We just ordered a couple of double smash burgers with fries and a pickle and beers, and it's AKA food porn.
Yeah, no, our break can't come soon enough, but they didn't come for that. They came to hear us. And honestly, I'm just going to be real with y'all. Come out here for the mini golf. Come out here for the weather, even if it's not just us. We just happen to be out here, and we're having a good time. We're going to be talking. You know what's funny about the weather and us kind of leading with that? It's like I wish, Bajani, honestly, man, I wish we felt as good about Houston sports right now as we feel right now outside in this weather, out here at this, as you mentioned, Tiger Woods designed mini golf course. Like, the feeling that we have right now as we sit here is not, I don't feel like, consistent with the feeling that we have about our Houston sports teams that we're going to talk about today.
No, and it's been the story for literally the last week or so. Beginning with the Astros, you know, incredible, like, not forecasted slide to end the regular season, and totally not forecasted start to the Houston Texans season, which, I mean, you're not even a month into it, and it's like skies falling, ceilings caving in, it's football Armageddon. But hey, guess what? Unfortunately, because you don't play 82 games in an NFL season or a 162, you play 17. It's that way for a reason. Historically speaking, you should feel like absolute hot garbage right now after 0-3.
Yeah.
Because only six teams in the history of the game since 1979 have made the playoffs after such a horrid start.
Yeah, but you know what? Honestly, for me, it's not like we're not far enough into it. And certainly if they lose this game, we're having a different conversation. And I think most of us feel like they're going to be able to beat the Titans at home. But for me, it's not as much of a mathematical thing that's got me down on the team, that's got me down on their chances, that's got me down on what they could be relative to what we thought they could be going into the season. It's not the mathematics of it all. It's not the, even just the 0-3. I was just talking to you about this before we started the show. They were supposed to win that game. The Jags were – they put that game on a play. They did all but gift-wrap that game to the Texans that they could not win, the reason why they're 0-3. But they could have won the game, been 1-2, and I would have come away from the game feeling pretty awful about the team still, is particularly the offense. And so it's not just, my point being, it's not just the 0-3 start. It's the look of it. It's the vibe of it. It's the feeling that, you know, after the first two games, we were able to say, hey, they played against two really good teams. They played against a Rams team that looks like it's really good. They played against a Bucks. They played against two playoff teams, and they had a chance to win the game. They have only lost one score game so far.
Yeah.
But to look so bad against such another bad team and to have very few to little, I would say little to no redeeming qualities. We talked about this as well. Little to no redeeming qualities on offense has you in a space where you're like, man, even if they were to win this game, even if they were to win the last game, it's not the mathematics. It's the way that it looks. It's the way that they play, or in some cases don't play, that's got you really down on the Texans season so far.
100%. Everybody's kind of, I would say, worst case scenario has kind of come to fruition, though. Like, to start this season, you knew, and it was the biggest story of the offseason, after the two of which, arguably, you had the best one in the entire NFL offseason.
Yeah.
This one was very questionable. It's like, dude, you just went 10-7 back-to-back years, and you're about to enter into that confirmation year that could make C.J. Stroud the highest-paid quarterback, highest-paid player in NFL history. Like, that's what we were looking at. And the offensive line, they decided to, like, Oppenheimer that stuff. And I watched that movie last night, by the way. I just wanted to use that right.
About time.
Really good. Oh, it was a really good movie. Hi, Tyler. How are you, sir?
Good, man. Good.
They blew up the offensive line. It was just like, whoa. This is the most pivotal season in the franchise's history. And you're going to do this? And, oh, by the way, you know you're not going to have Tank Dell. You don't have a Stephon Diggs. You know, yeah, Christian Kirk. Okay, cool. Whatever. Just nothing has aligned up. And I would question, and I would die on this hill and tell you that I could count probably on one hand, B. Scott, how many times everything has actually aligned now in 2 years plus three games where you had your best players healthy on the field together. I know it's football, but at least it happens for some teams, man.
Yeah.
Like the San Francisco 49ers a few years ago said they could do that. You know what I mean? The Kansas City Chiefs seemingly always do that. The Baltimore Ravens, not a problem. Like, you're not in the conversation of any of these teams right now. You're still a wannabe. You're still a pretender.
Well, all of it, for me, speaks to the makeup of the team. And so, from there, you got to go all the way up to the top. And this is the heart of the issue for me, is that everywhere where they decided to make a drastic change, I think you can justify all of the changes that they made, and specifically with the offensive line. I thought that they had to do something. Now, what they ended up doing, I think you can could have fairly questioned at the time. I know a lot of us did, and can fairly question now, obviously, with the performance that we've seen so far. But the issue for me is that everywhere it seems like they made a drastic change, they downgraded. And that's the issue. Like, you can make the drastic change, but look, it's got to work. It's got to make sense. And aside from just playing the results and whether it works or not, but can you logically justify the moves that they made? And I know Ron has mentioned this on his show of like, hey, say it out loud. Hey, we're going to bring in another first year play caller and dismiss the guy that would be a third year play caller because there were some issues or whatever the case may be, because we downgraded from the previous season or didn't play as well as we did that first season. We're gonna replace him with a first-year play caller. We're going to get rid of the only good offensive lineman. Say whatever you want about the culture fit and whatever you thought about the work ethic or the tone setting or the physicality. There were issues with Laremy Tunsil, but he was still clearly their best offensive lineman. You decide that you're not only are you going to remake the offensive line, but you're going to even send out the one guy that was actually good on it and replace him essentially now with a rookie. And like even the C.J. Gardner-Johnson thing, you go over to the news of the week. Hey, our safety's gone. Eric Murray's gone. No big deal. You can replace Eric Murray. We're going to upgrade and go get C.J. Gardner-Johnson, make something out of this failed Kenyon Green experiment. Oh, it turns out that only lasts three games, and you're going to pay him $6 to $8 million, whatever it is. You're going to have to just eat that for three games of poor play from C.J. Gardner-Johnson. So Think about that. From offensive play caller and designer to the entire offensive line, and specifically left tackle, but the entire offensive line, and even the safety position, which I don't think any of us necessarily looked at as a weakness, from like to a man or to a position, they have downgraded at all of their significant spots. All of the spots where they have called themselves making significant changes, they have gotten worse.
Yes. Yes. They have gotten worse.
And you know, maybe we should have seen it, but I think we gave ourselves time to justify it and to explain it away. But yeah, maybe we should have seen this coming. Maybe it shouldn't be as surprising or as shocking as it is. But I mean, you got to kind of call it the spade a spade.
I think we did see it coming. I think we just didn't want what we had envisioned in our minds as a pretty good possibility, probability even, would come to fruition. And it has. And, you know, the fact that, like, 0-3 from a historical standpoint, like, basically ends your season already, and you're going to have to do something as a statistical anomaly in the course of NFL history going forward to make this thing right, okay? That bothers me, but it also bothers me in that, is there ever enough time to make such a drastic change like the Houston Texans did, blowing up an offensive line, bringing in a new offensive coordinator, play caller, and not going out and buying, like, new bright, shiny toys to put in your receiver core, or just offensively, period. Like, there were some really good offensive linemen, B. Scott,
yeah,
that the Texans just simply weren't even reported to be on the conversation on. Hey, they cost a lot of money, right? They cost the amount of money that maybe we'd like them to spend on a receiver,
yeah,
or another running back.
But they, I mean, they spent $14 million on Cam Robinson.
And his ass is on the bench.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And when he plays, it's bad.
And he was one of the last dudes I think they scooped up, like, to play the position, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, how you say that guy's name?
Mekhi Becton.
Like, wasn't he, like, the most sought-after lineman on the market?
Well, and I mean, we saw, like, right when S free agency was beginning, we saw early on what the Bears were doing to address their offensive line. And we're like, hey, would love to be the Bears. Would love to be doing that kind of activity.
Yeah, well, and the Bears are in a similar spot that the Houston Texans are right now.
The Chargers went out and got guards.
Yeah, but Bears offense is ass.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you want to look at any stat across the board, EPA, points per game, all that good stuff. I mean, it's not good,
right?
And it's translating to what's on the field. I'd like to know, like, how many teams over the course of the last 25, 30 years, give me the last 10, make the research easy, started 0-3 and have given up fewer than 20 points in every game to start the year and have so much promise. Like, from a defensive perspective, you should be, could be 3-0,
yeah,
2-1, but you're not, because your offense is that bad. And then you have to hear in the same breath, in the same time span, your offensive coordinator say, oh, we're close, you know, we're improving. And they have to say all of the things that really aren't true, but to prevent further damning questions, to prevent you throwing your players under the bus, to prevent the media writing stories or talking about things like Diana Rossini is possibly going to be writing about this week. How many days are left in this week?
Yeah, it's Friday. It's a football Friday.
Today is football Friday.
Keep your eyes wide open for Sunday.
Holy
crap.
For
those Sunday morning news dumps that we get.
We're going to let you hear from Diana Rossini coming up next segment about what she had to say on the Dan Lebatard YouTube show. What do they call that? Scoop City? This feels like it needs to be called Scoop City, like everything in this town, because there's stories galore here in the city of Houston that we don't necessarily like to talk about, but it is the cold, harsh reality that, and I blame myself, a month and a half ago, short time ago, I thought, hey, this would be a great time to talk about potentially the golden age of Houston sports finally getting here. I brought that up in 2017 on a radio show, and then the Sean Watson's piece of crap ass decided to tear his ACL in a non-contact injury. And
felt like it in 2019. We kind of had a moment there where we might be in the golden era, and then of course you lose the World Series in 7 games, lose all your games at home.
The sports gods of Houston, Texas, do not, and I repeat, do not want us to have nice things for very long. That's just the way that it is.
Yeah. No, but I'll say this, though, before we get out of here into our break. I asked a question earlier that can be kind of like considered my question of the day. Like, what do y'all feel like are the redeeming qualities, if any, of the Texans offense? Like, if you can find them, and I know you have maybe one or two that you might be able to point to, Bajani, but I'm curious from the audience, what do you feel like are the redeeming qualities of the offense that you can glean on, that you can cling to. And then when you start talking about history, what about this team makes you feel like they can be historic in a good way? Like they can pull off the history that you speak of, that they can be one of these teams that starts 0-3, God forbid 1-4, like it looks like it'd be. I know the Ravens are a mess, but it looks like they can go into their bye week at 1-4 or something like that, worse if they lose to the Titans. What about the team makes you feel like this could be a historic one in a positive way? I would be curious to hear that answer.
Please remember that question, because I will give you about the only answer I think is possible.
Yes.
When we get to that. Hit us up, man. Sean Bajani, B. Scott, in for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner. We're live out here at Popstroke in Katy. This is a tremendous place. If you have not been here, at least Google image search the spot, and then you'd be like, oh, hey, these guys are pretty cool. We kind of like listening to them or disagreeing with them, and you can do that to our face and come out and see us, and you get free stuff along the way on a beautiful weather day, the most beautiful of the season. Do it at Popstroke with Sports Radio 610 and The Drive today. Coming up next, the very interesting Diana Rossini audio for you on your Houston Texans. We will have it next at Sports Radio 610.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, in for Ron Hughley and Clint Sterner, I'm Sean Bajani, and B. Scott is the guy to my left today. If you're watching on YouTube, Twitch, appreciate you. If you're listening on the free Odyssey app, you are very responsible and economical, and you're doing the right thing. If you are listening, driving around this crazy town, we appreciate you. And that means you're in the car. You can get out of here. Just turn around. Make a left turn, right turn, whatever you need to do. Get here to Pop Stroke in Katy. This is a glorious place. And you would think, hey, Katy, Pop Stroke, mini golf, beer, food, awesome day. That place has got to be packed. It's a headache. I don't want any part of it, Bajani. Katy's too busy for me. No.
Yeah, it's easy to get to.
It's literally right off of the freeway. And there's not a lot of people here right now. It is very easygoing golf. It's like if you said to yourself, hey, you know what? I would like to go play golf on a rando Wednesday in the middle of the afternoon in the heat of the summer. There's not going to be that many people on the golf course. You would be 100% correct. There's not a lot of people here. You can eat, drink, play comfortably, responsibly, and hang out with us as we're giving away Area 45 pint glasses today. B. Scott, have you gotten yours yet?
Oh, I'm going to get one. I'm going to get out of here with one. For sure. I don't have one yet. I know what y'all's faces look like. I'm probably maybe a little too familiar with what y'all look like, but the glasses are awesome. I encourage y'all to come out here and get you some. We're also offering free oil change if y'all want to get, like, everybody needs an oil change. This is one of those things, like, maybe you don't want a pint glass. Maybe you don't want to go to the game, and we're giving away some Texans tickets as well. But the free oil change, everybody need that. So come holler at us.
You know, if you need your oil changed, you can holler at me, too. I'll come
That's
over to
right.
your house and change
You're one of those guys.
I'm like a handy guy. I'm a handyman.
Yeah, change your oil, build you a fence, all of that.
Yeah, don't be getting too crazy on me. But, you know, the stuff that you don't want to do, Bajani.
Yeah, my daughter put a hole in her wall in the bedroom, man. I just haven't got no sheetrock to go do it. That'd be kind of something that you could just come do right away. it's taking me 3 weeks to address that thing.
Hey, check this out, though, too. If you were on site, you got to be on site to win these. And my guy, Captain Fireball, just walked in. I see my guy Gene back there. He walked in. Some of the most loyal listeners here are at Popstroke today. They're eligible. Why aren't you here? You could be eligible to win Academy Sports and Outdoors gift cards. $25 a pop. We'll be giving away four of those throughout the course of the show, and we'll do it up until 6 o'clock. What do you say, B. Scott? We do our first Academy gift card giveaway. I don't know. What time is it? 2:40. You want to do it at 2:40?
Yeah, let's do it at 2:40. Coming 2:40. Up. See how fast y'all can get here. Go to speed limit, but let's see how quick you can get here.
Nah, screw that. There ain't no cops on the road. I didn't see one cop on the whole way. Just be responsible. There ain't no cops. You'd be all right. Just don't get in trouble. All right. I'd feel bad. Okay. Here we go. Feel bad. You want to feel worse? How about when you listen to one of the most plugged-in NFL reporters, writers,
insiders, yeah,
like of this era, and you know she ain't bad looking either.
Oh God,
Diana. Well, come on.
Yeah, facts.
I'm just being honest. Diana Rossini, she's awesome. She was on the Dan Le Batard YouTube show called Scoop City this week, and one of the kind of offbeat guys, I guess, like not a co-host but a producer, I guess, kind of asked Dana Rossini during the course of conversation, like, "Hey, by the way, C.J. Stroud, Texans, why do they suck?"
Diana, is C.J. Stroud any good? What is going on with Houston?
It's a good question. I'm writing about it this week. C.J. Stroud is really good. I think they are still trying to figure themselves out on offense. They have a new play caller. They have a different looking offensive line. I still think they're working some kinks out. So he's still good. I'm not on this. I'm not in the camp of he's ruining his opportunity here to get some mega extension. I still think C.J. Stroud can play. I just think there's still a lot of work to be done, and there's some things going on behind the scenes that I think we're going to find out about soon.
Oh, hello. All right. What are we going to find out about very soon from Diana Rossini in regards to the Houston Texans? This week, it is Friday. Tomorrow is Saturday, end of week. What are we going to find out about that's going on behind the scenes with the Houston Texans?
Yeah, it's interesting because with all due respect to Diana Rossini, leading up into that last comment there, she was saying a whole lot of nothing, or at the very least a whole lot of stuff that we've already said and have already heard right here on this very station. That the offensive line didn't very good, that they got a new play caller, that they're trying to find their identity on offense. We know about all of those things to be wrong with the team. It's all we talk about. But that little last nugget there at the end about stuff behind the scenes that we're going to find out about later, it doesn't make you feel really good. I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what she's talking about. But coming off the heels of them not only releasing C.J. Gardner-Johnson 3 games into his tenure with the Texans, but also like it not just being some quiet release for a team that seems to have nothing to say about a Joe Mixon injury that in some ways has compromised their season, I believe, for a team that's been as quiet about that and as reluctant to even talk about it when others raise the issue.
Yeah.
Somebody at least had a lot to say about C.J. Gardner-Johnson and the issues that he presented both on the field and in the locker room for this team, which is just to say there is a leak somewhere. There is somebody that is willing to talk to somebody about the issues that are happening behind it, both what we can see on the field, what's obvious to the naked eye, but also what's not obvious to the naked eye and stuff that you would have to kind of know a little bit more about what's going on to know. So Diana Rossini, even though you don't see her necessarily at all the games, she's not at all the practices and press conferences, she's not a fixture in the Houston media because she's a national reporter, but she's very much plugged in, has the phone numbers and the contacts for everybody that's relevant to this discussion.
Yeah.
And so there's some smoke there, and I would imagine where there is smoke, there is fire.
Well, and, you know, look, she's not the first one, the only one this week to notice, to kind of see, witness that what we all can see. We all can watch the games. That's what we all have in common. Now, all of us cannot go in the locker room, but you don't need to go in the locker room. Mm-hmm. You can watch these press conferences on YouTube and various platforms, social media, however you decide to catch it. This is what Mike Florio's done. Mike Florio said a couple of days ago, actually immediately after the Texans lost to the Jaguars Monday morning, and then he said it again on a podcast later, not a podcast, but a visit on this show with The Drive, Ron Hoogley and Clint Sterner. He came on this show and said the same thing. Hey, red alert, something's going on. I don't know what it is, but it's clear to see that they have issues. We talk about that. It's corroborated by, like, the national people, and less Florio, but much more Diana Rossini, who, you know, does do the digging, does do the dirty work, you know, is trying to find out everything possible where there ever could be a story or is a story. If it did not involve a Nick Chubb, not a Nick Chubb, a Joe Mixon, if it did not involve a new offense, you know, install, like basic problem, that's not a story. People and teams go through those all the time. There's got to be something else brewing under the surface for that to hit how it hits for Houston Texan fan.
And think about it, like just naturally when things go south, and I think you've had what you've seen over the last couple of years, like starting with the firing of Bobby Slowick and even leading up until now, is trying to take note of how the Texans respond to, I don't want to call it disaster, but how they respond to adversity. And so far, far, not so good, right? They have to fire their offensive coordinator after giving them a raise. They have to remake their offensive line, as you mentioned. That's not what we're talking about here, though, right? And then behind the scenes, you've already got stories of discord. They got rid of the guy that they feel like was the source of it on the defensive side of the ball. But that's the side of the ball that's actually performing. If they got issues on defense because a guy's giving up a play here or there, or because he's not playing up to his assignment. Look, Sean, you've watched plenty of film.
Yep.
You know guys bust coverage all the time. Like, it happens every week for every team. It's not a new thing. C.J. Gardner-Johnson is not the first person to blow an assignment or to go rogue or play as an independent contractor in the concept of a team defense, right? But that unit still performing. What about on this other side of the ball, to the conversation, to the question that was asked about C.J. Stroud, where the left tackle seems to have promise but is not ready? Is just simply not ready for the assignments that they have put in front of him, right? For a first-year play caller who so far seems like he's overwhelmed.
Maybe he ain't ready.
Maybe he ain't ready, right? And to the point that I was making earlier, everything that you've done, is specifically in the significant spots, have backfired or have downgraded from where they were to begin with what you were trying to fix. So I could see there being some frustration and some issues behind the scenes and some questioning of whether it's the process or whatever the case may be. I could see that being the case.
I ultimately think they got too big for their britches. That's what the Texans are showing me so far. They got too big for their britches. They saw a lot of success, unexpected success, the first 2 years under DeMeco, C.J. Stroud, turn of the franchise. They completely turned the tables on everybody. Nobody saw that coming. And sometimes I think you feel so good and you think you're so good at a particular job. You think you're so good at a particular area that, you know what, even if we do hiccup, we can sustain it. We can tolerate that. We can move on. But it's a very big deal to do what the Texans did from an offensive line standpoint, from a play calling standpoint. By the way, like, all the people that are clamoring for Gerard Johnson to, you know, take over the play calling duties, or maybe even take over both OC and play calling duties because you want Nick Haley's ass fired already. The Texans made the conscious decision as an organization this offseason to, because they interviewed Gerard Johnson, say, we don't believe you're the guy. We believe somebody else who also hasn't done this before is the guy and that has more experience in the NFL than you do. But they also made that same decision over countless others. One in particular that has two more years of experience, that is a new play caller against your opposition this week, named Bo Hardegree. Who the hell's that guy? Well, that's a guy that's going to be charged with possibly maybe trying to do the impossible and save Callahan's job as Titans head coach on Sunday. We'll talk about that pivotal week 4 clash against the Titans, what it means for the Texans, win or lose. Coming up next, it's The Drive, Sports Radio 610.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Pop Stroke and Katie, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yeah, I think we've shown improvement. We had a good week of practice last week, okay? I think that there were instances where I thought we had some nice, efficient runs. I thought there were instances where we were able to get the ball out. And then, you know, the thing that we still have to do is clean up, you know, the operation in terms of pre-snap penalties, turnover, stuff like that. So we're on a crusade to do that. That's the most important thing, you know, and eliminating that type of football and allowing us to move forward. Still too many get back on track situations.
Crusades take a long time. And I already don't like it for like this guy for that. Crusades are not something that can be accomplished within the course of a Monday through Friday situation.
Yeah.
A crusade can sometimes take generations, B. Scott.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be damned if I'm going to put Houston sports fans through a damn generation.
The fact of the matter is, we ain't got that much time.
No.
Right? You're north of 40 now. I'm approaching it.
Bro, what are you doing?
I'm just saying, do we have generations left?
No.
We do not. I mean, look, I'm right there behind you, Bajani. We're in the same situation here. Look, we only got but so much time. It can't be no odyssey. It can't be no crusade. It's got to happen now, buddy.
Oh, my God.
What are we doing, bro?
The Crusades. I studied the Crusades in, like, theology when I was a freshman and sophomore at Catholic school. I don't need to go through that again. No. It took forever. It was A lot of violence, a lot of heads rolled, which brings me to my main point.
They could use some more violence.
Well, violence, yeah, definitely. And heads rolling, I don't know. We'll see. I think week four, in a couple of days, B. Scott, that could determine a lot. In all seriousness, this is in what I think was coming in the most pivotal, important, highly anticipated season in Texans franchise history. This is a week four in all of that. It's a microcosm because this very well could determine where you go as an organization from whatever happens at the close of business on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
We know four teams out of 165 since 1990 that has started 0-3 have gone on to make the playoffs. Six, only six, have done it since 1979. Only one since the year 2000. That was the same organization, the Houston Texans. One other team, though. One team since 2000's gone 0-3, and within those first three games has allowed 20 points or less and has gone on to do nothing. Not go to the playoffs. Not win the AFC, whatever, NFC, whatever. And whoever that one team was that has started so poorly and given up so few points, it doesn't matter who it was. It wasn't the Texans. They weren't from 2018. The Texans literally have to become the first team in the last at least 25 years to right the ship, to get back to just being in the conversation of where it's supposed to just start in the playoffs.
So I feel like the thing that we miss whenever we do these historical context conversations, sometimes the thing that's really easy to overlook is the why of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, why? Think about it. Why a team is 0-3? Remember earlier I was talking about how it's not just that they're 0-3, but it's what it looks like.
Right.
I can guarantee you that most of the time when you look around and a team is 0-3, they've earned it. Like, very, very rarely is a team that bad, and it's like, oh, well, if it had just been a thing or here or there. No, there are systemic or very specific issues that you can point to almost all of these teams, because that's the commonality, right? It's not just that this many teams hasn't done it with this record over this amount of time. It's that a 0-3 team, they only play 17 games, right? Used to play 16, played less than that way back in the day. But a 0-3 team, when it come down to it, is probably not a good team. Not a good team.
Not so, yet.
Not, at least not yet. Or there are enough warts or enough holes in the team to point to explain why they are 0-3.
Yeah.
And even if they improve, even if they go on some kind of hot streak of some sort, or if the schedule gets a little bit more favorable to them, which I think is the case for the Texans this weekend, I don't feel confident about them winning anything about to do with the Texans. It's just the fact that they're playing the Titans this weekend, and that's one of the few teams in the league that I can objectively say is worse than our own. But, like, normally when a team is in this situation, they have earned it. It is with good reason, and that is the part that is, I feel like, most discouraging or hardest to escape with all of this. It's like, yeah, I'm thinking about the historical context, but I'm also thinking about them, like, being a lot like the 0-3 teams in the terms of being bad, right? Like, not just, hey, they're some sort of outlier. Hey, they're actually a good team that's 0-3. No, they are a lot like the teams that are 0-3 that we speak of that don't do this thing that we want the Texans to do.
What does the defensive side of the football look like, though, on those other teams? You know,
well, I mean, what does the defensive side of the football look like now? Like, yeah, they've held teams to 20 points or less. Fine. Yeah, so the scoring defense is good. They got playmakers. Well, but total defense, man, they still rank right around in the middle of the pack of the league. Like, overall, it's still kind of just a middling average defense with some playmakers that we really like, some edge rushers that we really like, an all-pro corner who's been injured, who's injured in the last game, is probably injured in this game. But, like, they overall, I did this with the offense. Other than just naming the names, giving me the names of the guys on the on respective side of the ball, overall, it just has not been good enough. They are not good enough. It's not like we're talking about the 2000s Ravens defense or the 0-2 Bucks or like some like historic defense. We're talking about a pretty good to decent defense that's being put in a bad spot all the time, time and time again, by an inept offense. Like when Derek Stingley goes out last game, I had the realization of, oh, damn, they've done this before where they've had an all-pro like super duper defensive difference maker, whether it's Derek Stingley or in the past, in the case of J.J. Watt, where it's like, damn, you might have a generational talent on defense, but it doesn't matter because you don't score points, because you don't get in the red zone.
Guess
and when
what?
You do get in the red zone, you still don't score points.
You know this. What generational talent on defense did the Texans squander the career of, at least while he's a Houston Texan? That's J.J. Watt.
Well, right.
You've been there, done that before.
Exactly.
Right? But – and that is – that. It sounds like the sky's falling, but I don't know, man. It kind of is. Like, it could. It could because – We have a larger conversation that very well could be had and with much more relevance over the course of just the next couple of weeks if the Texans even win this game, B. Scott, because they're very realistically staring 1-4 and you could see 1-5, maybe 1-6 in the face over the course of the next few weeks. Context is important. But you asked a question earlier that I kind of want to get back to in that you asked something to the effect like, hey, what have the Texans actually really done well that you can kind of hang your hat on?
What's the redeeming quality of their offense?
Redeeming quality. Okay, I don't know. And I don't want to go as so far to like just name individuals and things that they've done. What Nico Collins, that's kind of it. Will Anderson, and Danielle Hunter, Derek Barnett. There are a lot of things. No, here's what I want to talk about. And I might be crazy for thinking this, but in the moment, the final drive against the Jags, the last minute 48, and not even just that, it was their drive before that where they were moving the ball.
Yeah, like, they were.
It was hitting some dudes. It was finding Dalton Schultz, finding Christian Kirk on a 4th-and-3 nonetheless, especially on that final drive. It was C.J. Stroud recognizing, boom, play rate breaks down. I got to get upfield, get some yards, scramble, whatever. And that's what he's shown a larger propensity to be able to do. And D'Amico Ryans on Texans All Access during their coaches show said it, I think, on Monday. And I think it's huge because there's a lot of lip service, a lot of BS in those shows and those appearances. Nothing could have been further from the truth, though, in what he'd said on Monday, is that doing something that he likes the 2-minute drill. He likes being thrown into the fire, having to make quick decisions and go boom, 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 boom. Well, what if Nick Caley could pull his head out of his collective you-know-what and recognize, hey, here's some things that we did really well. Here's actually some things CJ likes. We don't have to wait until there's literally 2 minutes or less to do these things. What if we put the opposition's defense on its heels? What if we applied the pressure when it's a 0-0 football game? What if we applied the pressure, you know, at various points throughout to make things uncomfortable and very comfortable for us?
Yeah, yeah, no, I love it. Now, the damned if you do, damned if you don't element to that was, hey, even when you were moving the ball, even when it seemed like you had some moments in that last game, you get the turnovers, right, from your best players. C.J. Stroud throws an interception. Nico Collins obviously fumbles the football. C.J. Stroud throws another interception late in the game. So, like, those are things that you absolutely just cannot have.
Yeah.
But it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't element to it. But here's the issue that I have with what
two of those things were anomalous, though.
No, I get it. They were anomalous. But here's the issue that I have specifically with the 2-minute drill part. Like, okay, there's something that they can hang their hat on. But there are also just other elements of the game that you have to be good at. Like, you can't just be like, hey, we're going to be a 2-minute drill offense. Like, you're not Chip Kelly at Oregon. You're not some spread offense in the Big 12. At some point, and you know this, Sean, I don't have to tell you this, but just for the audience and just to think about this, at some point in the game, at various points in the game, you are going to need at the very least to be able to max protect against a 4-man rush.
Mm-hmm.
They can't max protect against a 4-man rush,
yeah,
which I don't know if y'all understand mathematically. That's not good. That means that you have more guys in protection than they are bringing pressure, and you can't block it.
You're so losing the 5-on-4.
That's what I'm saying. And sometimes the 6-on-4.
Sometimes
the
6-on-4.
In some cases. And so it's like, okay, these are those are simple things that you can point to and say, hey, look, maybe you're not as talented as we thought, but you can be better than that. Damn it, you can max protect against a 4-man front. Or how about, let's not false start. Let's not have all of these pre-snap issues that Nick Haley's talking about.
Sure.
Those are things that you can point to tangibly and say, at the very least, let's not do that anymore.
But you know what? He's right on those. He's absolutely right on those. And it's what he needs to be right about if there aren't those things that are putting them in second and eight or third and 12 kind of a situations, the self-inflicted wounds, which have been there before. You ain't got no explosive outside of that 50-yard touchdown pass from Stroud to Nico
that
on
they gave
like
you.
A re- yes, they gave it to
they
you.
Gave it to you
with a nice little tiny bow on top, yeah. And it was like Merry Christmas, Happy Birthday, all that stuff rolled into one. This is a huge week for the Texans and Nick Haley and Cole Popovich.
I'm fired
in particular,
up,
man. I'm fired up too, and I'm even fired. I'm fired up for something that's about to happen in the course of the next 5 hours and 40 minutes. That is Astros and Angels. Do or die, man. Astros got to win out. They got to make things happen over the course of the next, well, few hours, days. Otherwise, their season's over. But very familiar territory, B. Scott, something the Astros have seen over the course of the last 2 years now. It's going to come down to not just the final week, but maybe even the final darn day. Things that should absolutely, though, be on the table for the Astros from this moment forward. That's next.
Sarah Jessica Parker, man, she's always done it for me.